cooperative, and I certainly know you want to be. In the next place, I don't want you to be a weak president. I can't understand, however, what has happened in this thing, and I want you to listen just a few minutes while I tell you. First place, when the House stopped at this Egyptian amendment, Russ called me right away, said he wanted to be heard. And I told him gladly to hear him. Then he called me to say that he'd been assigned to go to London and wanted it held over until the Monday following when he'd be back. And I said, that's all right, we'll hold it open. On Sunday, the undersecretary, Ball, called me and told me that Russ health wouldn't permit him to appear the next day and that he wanted to appear in his place.
He's moved down to Florida almost permanently. Going to stay down there the 18th. He's in bed down there.
Well, I'm glad he's getting...
This is his hospital. This is his birthday yesterday. Pardon me, I interrupted. He's 56 years old, but he was in Florida enjoying the sunshine.
Well, I'm glad he is. At any rate, I cooperated by putting off the hearings in the first instance.
He told me about that.
Putting them off in the second instance and had Ball before us and made a good statement. He made it very clear that the request of the administration that the House amendment will have its teeth pulled. I took the lead in suggesting a escape, which Ball said they could live with. And we got it passed in committee over the opposition of such men as Ellender, McClellan, and others. At any rate, I did put in the committee the experiment station amendment, which was simply a delaying amendment until hearings could be held without any fixed date at all as to when the thing would... when the delay would go off. It wasn't any stop amendment. Got to the floor, Mansfield, Dirksen, Munn, all supported me in getting the administration Senate amendment voted through by the vote of 44 to 38, when some of the people who should be standing by you voted the other way. Cannon, for instance, who you elected out in Nevada by a handful, voted the other way and wouldn't even stand by Bible, who stuck by me, both in committee and on the floor. Scoop Jackson did the same thing, wouldn't stick by Magnuson. And so on, I could go on. Well, at any rate, when the time comes for the Munn Amendment, Mansfield came over and told me that he had enough votes to override. He had enough votes to...
suspend.
To suspend the rule. And Dirksen told me the same thing. And Long was backing Mansfield. And Kuechel, who had backed me in the committee, had left. He would have been backing Dirksen, I'm sure, if he was there. But he'd left, or at least wasn't there. And on a quick count, it's very evident to me that they had the two-thirds vote. Besides that, these folks who were moving in that direction had all stood by me and by you in the on the Egyptian thing. I raised the point of order, and it was overruled on a voice vote. They wanted me to say nothing. Instead, I got up and called attention to the very great difference between the VA amendment and the House and the experiment station amendment. I could have called attention to more if I'd had a chance to read the VA amendment, which I didn't have. But I did call attention to the fact that it hadn't been cleared before the committee and didn't relate to agriculture. And at any rate, it was voted. When I had a chance to read it, I saw it was an absolute stop. It wasn't just a delaying matter like the amendment on the experiment station. And I wouldn't blame you for vetoing a bill that would have any such stop provision in it. So what I started out to do was to try to soften the VA amendment where it would be at least a reasonable approach to the subject, make it like the experiment station amendment. I worked with Mansfield, and he finally came back with a counter-proposal to make it July 1st. And he was supported in that by Clint Anderson and by Munt. I don't know who all else, but they're the ones who met together. I reported this to the White House, called Mike Manitow, and he called me back and told me that was all right to move ahead on it, that the White House would help me on it. I don't know whether they called it your case.
No, they didn't. I never heard of that. This is the first time I ever heard it.
It seems to be a matter of the right hand not knowing what the left hand is doing.
It is. I'm going to talk to Manitow about that.
He should. Not only Manitow, but I'm sure the others were talking to Mahar, because we had the assurance that the two heads of the agencies, Freeman and Driver, would supply us the assurance in writing that they would hold things up till July 1st. There wasn't any thing beyond that at all. There wasn't any waiver of executive authority involved. I thought we had materially softened the VA amendment. In fact, I know we had. And Freeman called me and told me it had been cleared and that he'd bring the letter over. He brought it. I have the letter here. It was reported to the committee. Driver called and said he was on his way over here with the letter. Then he called 55 minutes later to the committee to say that he'd had that there'd been crossed wires and that he had to confer with the White House.
On that point, Spencer, just so we cleared up. Oh, excuse me. All right, okay.
Because I've tried to be very cooperative, and I don't like to be left in the position that I'm left. When I got back to the office, here was a call from Mike Manitow stating that there'd been some crossed wires, but that it had been cleared up, and that they would both be here with the letters just as quickly as we could resume the conference meeting. I had a call immediately from George Mahon to the same effect, so I went back over to the conference, and Freeman was already there with his letter, and Driver came in very shortly to work out the form of the letter. The matter had been committed to Mahon and myself to try to work out the letters in such form that it could be approved, accepted, and accomplish what we had agreed to accomplish. The Freeman letter was amended. I have both the original and the amended, both signed by him and delivered. Driver, after agreeing to the form of his letter, which had some changes in it, went back over with Carl Albert. Carl was sitting in with the meeting also to redraft his letter and bring it back to us. Upon the strength of that, we went ahead and closed out the conference, signed the conference report with the understanding that the Driver letter was to be delivered in the form that had been agreed upon there in that committee meeting. With Albert present, and with not only Mahon and I present, but I'd asked Milt Young to sit in on it because he was for the VA amendment and I was against it. And he did, and he approved it. And Saltonstall also sat in on it. I didn't ask him to, but he came in and he approved it. At any rate, then the next thing we heard, after we'd reported the matter, Mahon and I jointly, to the press, which was outside, about a half hour later, we received a call that you had called Driver and had told him not to deliver the letter. And still later, Freeman called me and said that you called him and asked him to recall the letter. And in both cases, the reason stated was that you weren't willing to postpone the matters longer than 60 days. And that's all right. I mean, you had a right to take that position if you wanted to, but at the same time, we had proceeded upon the clear understanding that this had the White House approval. And it's a highly embarrassing matter to me. I'm going to have to just put the Freeman letter in the record to state what happened, just like I've told you, to state that we were trying to cooperate with the White House, and I personally was trying to soften the VA amendment to make it into a form that I thought had been approved by the White House. I'm not for the VA amendment at all. I don't think it should have been offered. I'm not at all for keeping going of uneconomical hospital. Made it clear on the floor, made it clear in conference, going to make it clear on the floor again. I think you're entirely within your right in trying to make the thing more economical. But to make this issue after we've tried to clear with the White House and proceed in accordance with White House pre-approval given, it's the thing that I object to so entirely. And it leaves me personally in a very, very false position. It leaves George Mahon in a false position. And I don't know what will happen if what he is suggesting now takes place. He's suggesting that we go ahead with the acceptance of the Senate version on the Egyptian thing and report the other three amendments, the Senate amendments, in disagreement. That the House works well. I don't know what the House will do, and that's up to the House to act. They might refuse to accept any of the Senate amendments, in which case we'd come back over here and we'd have the same VA situation on the floor of the Senate, where I'd make my position equally clear again that I'm against the VA amendments in the form that they put it in. I would have to stick with it now in the form that we worked it out, if they're willing to reword it so that it's like our experiment station amendment, simply a delaying matter. I thought I was helping you people, and that you had approved in advance what I was trying to do on the VA amendment. I had no reason to think anything else. The matter is such, Lyndon, that I've got to call you every time that I want to know what the White House thinks. Well, I think it comes up pretty fast. I don't want to bother you, and I don't believe I've called you in this new session at all, because I understand the pressure you're under. I don't want to bother you. I want to back you up when I can. I've shown it in this Egyptian thing. It's been much simpler for me to side with the House amendment. I didn't believe in it, in spite of the fact that 10 of my House members had voted for it. I led the fight to correct it. I thought that was the major issue involved. And then I've tried to soften these other two things, soften the VA thing, to where it would be acceptable. And I insisted on softening the experiment station thing before I put it in. And so that's the fix that I'm in. And I don't think you've understood it at all, and I'm glad to have this chance just to tell you just what the situation is.
Well, I've told you my viewpoint. I appreciate very much your attitude and whatever you all do, I'll abide by it as best I can. I called in the leadership 10:30 yesterday morning. Larry was present. I don't go down underneath and talk to his assistants, but I made it clear to, I don't have any spokesman up there. I don't try to go to each individual. They talk about arm twisting, and I don't call them. But I had the speaker there, and I had the majority leader of the Senate there. And I had the Mr. Smathers there. I had Mr. Long there, and I asked all three of them to help me.
Smathers wasn't there, was he?
Yes, he was, yesterday morning at 10:30. And I made it abundantly clear to them that I would veto this bill if they had those two amendments in it. That I just couldn't do it. And to please not ask me to do it. And try to find some resolution to it. And that I wanted to be fair, and I would be willing. The speaker spoke up and said, well, I'll tell you what I'll do. I will see, would you take 60 days if I could get 60 days? I said, Mr. Speaker, I'll have to talk to the two agencies involved. But my inclination would be to do what the leadership recommends to me to do. There's no use in having leaders if you don't try to follow them. But I cannot commit I'd take 60 days, although that would be my inclination. And if you get 60 days, you let me know, and I'll immediately contact Veterans Administration in Freeman. That was the last I heard of it until someone called me from the Hill and said that they understood that these people were going to bring letters, and they couldn't understand it in the light of what I'd said. And I said, well, certainly Mike would tell them that they're confronted with a veto and to try to find some alternative. Certainly Long would tell them. Certainly Smathers would tell them. The Speaker and Albert were there, and Hale Boggs. I hadn't gone down and looked up Manitos. I will from now on. He was there when I came here, and I've chosen to continue him. I think he's a nice boy, but I don't think I don't think he's ever talked to me since I've been here. He talks to Larry, and Larry, who's Kennedy's man, reports to me.